Welcome back to the Paul Revere Show. At the second half of our show, I'm delighted to have Pastor Greg Lewis here with us with From Souls to the Poles. And please feel free to call us, 844-967-2789, and join the conversation. Welcome, Pastor Lewis.
Hey, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
So here we are, right here on this holiday, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. How did Dr. King impact your life?
Well, he had a critical influence on my life. You know, as a youngster, I knew of Dr. King, but I didn't know that he was as powerful as he was. You know, I started doing all this advocacy work because when I was 9 years old, there was a riot in Milwaukee, and, you know, there were folks throwing, you know, Molotov cocktails in buildings in my neighborhood. I lived on 15th and Center next to LeVon Way Boys Club, if anybody's familiar. And on Titonia was a really big business district. And, you know, one day, one of our young heroes, Clifford McKissick, had come back from Whitewater his freshman year. He was the first youngster to go to college in my neighborhood. He was our hero. And he was standing out front of the house, and I was on my top porch across the street from the McKissick's home. And he was looking around for his brothers because he knew they were out and they were going to do something kind of sinister. And he was worried about them, and he walked back to his back door, and he went in the door, and the door closed. And when that door closed, we heard gunshots for about 30 seconds of gunshots. And next thing we heard was his mother screaming. You could hear it for blocks, her scream. You know, oh, they shot my baby. And I was 9 years old, and I'm sitting there, and I saw the whole thing, and I'm like, wow. And Mr. Outlaw next door, who is the longest tenured teacher in MPS history, he wasn't there, but he came out of his house. He said, there's glass in my eyes. And they said, get back in that house, or we're going to take you to jail. And I was sitting there as a 9 year old, and I told my mother, I said, they don't treat us the same way they treat other people. Man. And that's what I really noticed, you know, that, you know, I was being treated differently. And, you know, that started my advocacy. And I'm telling you that because the next year in 68, you know, I was in Mr. Outlaw's house, that teacher I'm talking about, and somebody came to the door, and they opened that door. They said, they killed King. They killed King. And we was all standing there like, they killed King, you know, and everybody was, you know, rushing out to go to St. Boniface right on 12th and by North Division High School on 12th Street, 12th and Center. And, you know, I went to tell my mother. I said, man, I'm going to march. I was 9, 10 by then. I was 10 years old. She said, no, you're not. You're not going out there to march. You know, no, you're not. And she turned her head, and I made that beeline to St. Boniface. Oof. And I was marching for Dr. Martin Luther King, and Father Grumpy was the leader at that time. And I was a little tired. I was a little guy. Yeah. And Father Grappi, as I was marching, he was holding my hand. And then he was holding some other little girl's hand on the other side. And we were marching for Martin Luther King's sake. And we got to that bridge, man. We had marched a long way. And we got to that bridge. And then people started throwing stuff. And I tried to run. And Father Grappi said, no, don't run, son. Stay right here with me.
Wow.
And I was thinking, you know, well, I guess I have to. I don't know my way home. And I got to stay with you. And that's how I, you know, I engage myself. And that's my closeness to Dr. Martin Luther King. He, you know, from then on, the struggle in my heart was certainly it was on. And that, you know, that was something else.
Oh,
it
that's
really
a hell
was.
Of a story.
I'll never forget it. I'll never forget that day.
Wow.
Thank you so much for that powerful story. You know, Souls to the Polls. Tell us about Souls to the Polls, because it sounds like they're also trying to march for freedom and equality.
Yeah, Souls to the Polls comes out of an organization called Pastors United. I'm the president and founder of Pastors United, and we started it back in 2010. We started working on Souls to the. We started working on Pastors United, mm-hmm. But Valerie Jarrett, Barack Obama's senior advisor, had come to town, and she came to one of our meetings, and we started talking, and we found out that, you know, we could go vote on Sundays. And then we said, yeah, we're going to start going vote on Sundays, because we had this organization with 300 faith leaders. And we said, man, when we get out of church on Sundays, we're going to go vote. And then somebody said, let's call it Souls to the Polls. And that's how I started talking about Souls to the Polls. And I started doing that because I was organizing with Bruce Colburn. He was with SEIU. And I was organizing pastors to, you know, gather their members to get out and vote. You know, we couldn't tell them who to vote for, but we could certainly tell them to get out and vote. And we had talked to about 67 preachers. I know it's 67 because I documented it. And we had a big meeting, and we started talking about working together and all those things. And we started talking about getting out to vote. And that's how we started, you know, with our Pastors United group, and we start calling this initiative that we're going to get out on Souls to the Polls. And I didn't know that it was all over the country. I thought it was us, you know, and you know, I'm not sure it wasn't us, but I know we started calling, man, we going on Sunday, we going to the polls, and we started calling it Souls to the Polls. And now we're up to about 540 faith leaders working together to get out the vote. And that's why in Milwaukee, it's Souls to the Polls, MKE. And we hope to move it into Racine and Kenosha and maybe even Beloit.
The well, it sounds like out here in Waukesha land, we need it too. So tell me, from your vantage point, Pastor, what do you perceive as the immediate threat to Wisconsin democracy?
You know, the suppression. You know, I always like to read, Attorney Thompson. I love to read, and I love to keep up with what's going on. And, you know, I just Googled one day. I said, you know, how many ways are they trying to suppress, you know, the vote? And it was 61. So, in saying that, I'm saying to you that voter suppression is the biggest threat to our democracy. And if we don't stand up against that, if we don't start to stop voting against our own self-interest, voter suppression is going to really dissolve our democracy, and we'll be in a dictatorship sooner than we think.
So how do you see, here we are in 2022, we got a election coming up in February, a primary, right? Nonpartisan primaries around the state. How do you see voter suppression rearing its ugly head today?
Well, it's already starting. A judge just knocked down the right for us to have these drop boxes in our communities. You know, those drop boxes are very important. Some people don't have transportation. Some people are just old. And then some people just really want to take the extra mile to vote. And, you know, for for a judge to tell folks that there's only going to be one drop box in a whole city of Milwaukee or a whole district or whatever, that's going to be a crippling experience for folks who really don't believe in a system in the first place. And what I mean by that is that most of the folks in my community just don't trust the system to be equal, to be something that would be developmental for their well-being. And they're not going to go the extra mile to vote because they just don't think their vote counts. So what we have to keep talking about is, if your vote didn't count, why do they have 61 suppression reasons to keep you from voting? And that message has to be loud and clear. We have to simplify it so people who are on the ground understand that something is being taken away from you. And then that way, maybe somebody will get upset and start talking about fighting back. And that is very important right now. We have to fight back, you know, from, you know, purging of votes. We have to fight back from, you know, this really complex wave that we have to navigate through, this registration system. You know, even things like having folks who can speak more than one language at these polling places is important. All those things, having it convenient for people with disabilities, for people who are elderly, for people who really move a lot, you know, having all those things in place, you know, that's just naming a few, Attorney Thompson. That's just naming a few of the items that are put forth. And it's not just one item that's going to prevent us from having our freedom to vote. You know, I always say, listen, man, it ought to be simple as this to vote. Man, I ought to be able to go to McDonald's, say, hey, man, I want a Big Mac, and give me one of those ballots.
Oh, hell yeah.
You know, fill out that ballot, put it in a box, and they come to that place and pick it up that evening. That's how simple it should be. In some countries, you know, you get a ticket for not voting. In the Netherlands, you get a ticket if you don't vote. Here, they try to prevent you from voting. I think it ought to be made easier, not more difficult. But those folks who think that we're not going to vote for them or keep them in power, they are constantly making ways to discourage folks from voting. And the biggest obstacle right now is those maps that they're creating, that they can keep power no matter what we do. We can outvote them all we want, but the maps tell us that we'll never win.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. We're going to be coming up on a break momentarily. And then I want to come back and revisit a couple of the items that you brought up. But just in the couple minutes we have here before we go to commercial, what do you think it is that is preventing folks from understanding what's going on? What, in other words, what do we have to do in terms of messaging to talk to people?
You know, first of all, we got to find a way to really simplify the message. We got to simplify it to its total root. We have to tell people, you know, Michael Jordan's father, you know, in that special, he said, you know how to get Michael motivated? Tell him what he can't do. Man, we got to tell these people what they can't do. We got to tell them what's being taken away from them. Yeah. And we got to simplify it. We got to bring it to its lowest denomination so that people walking down the street will understand that somebody's taking something away from you that's valuable. But if we pick it up, we can change the way we live. We have to really simplify the message. We have to make sure that people understand what is going on, and we have to do it like yesterday. We don't have much time, man. We got to do it right now. But you know what? People see this as a problem. Man, I see this as an opportunity for us to turn folks around and make it real for folks to have power.
We're going to come back on the other side, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this bottom line and simplifying it and what we've got to do in 2022. Thank you so much.